part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm grand, thanks.
Great, great. Well, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate your time.
Oh. Yeah, my pleasure, and thank you very much for taking your time out.
Excellent. Well, first, let me say that, you know, I took a look through your work. I found your Etsy shop, and I must say, your stuff looks delightful, sir.
Thank you very much.
I really like all of it, everything that I've seen. I mean, is the Kickstarter that you started over, or?
Yeah, so it ended on Thursday.
So we're late. We're late to the game.
Yeah, but that's fine. I mean, I've got the pre-order up and stuff, so this will still be helpful whenever it goes out. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And your name is Chris Baldy, correct?
Yep. That's
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha. Fun. And you're in Glasgow?
Usually, yes. Right now, I'm in a tiny cabin in the Highlands of Scotland.
Oh, but you're still in Scotland, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Great.
I accidentally double booked myself and booked a holiday forgetting I had this call.
Oh.
So my wife, who works in tech, has nicely set up a very professional microphone and stuff in this tiny little cabin.
Nice. Yeah, well, we booked way in advance, so I completely understand forgetting. And no, I appreciate you coming on. And again, your name is Chris Baldy. The reason that we have you on, or at least that I knew about you, is because of this Kickstarter that you had going called Jacques. I'm the ugly American.
Yes.
Jacques and the Great Art Theft. Yeah. And it was on Kickstarter, but it looks like you can still get it. I'm going to say the URL. It's etsy.com/UK/shop/Chris Baldy. And that's BALDIE. I want people to find your stuff. And you have a whole bunch of stuff on that Etsy shop, but Jacques and the Great Art Theft is the thing that kind of like drew me to you. So thanks for taking the time, and thanks for, you know, crossing the pond to chat with me.
My absolute pleasure. Yeah. I'm really excited to do it.
So. And we should say, my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And would you like to just tell people like what Jacques is about?
Yeah, I would. For some reason, I'm really bad at this, and I kind of
that's okay.
Someone asks me this question.
We can walk through it.
Yeah, it's a Parisian cat burglar, and he's trying to achieve a certain goal that he's had for a while. So he's breaking into a museum in Paris, trying to liberate some art, shall we say?
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it's a comic in the style of classic European comics, I would say. So your Asterixes, your Tintins. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a big adventure caper, shall we say.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, I looked through the Kickstarter, and again, I looked through your Etsy shop, and first of all, Jacques looks gorgeous, as does your other stuff. It looks like you have other books. Space Captain, which looks like a lot of fun. Roll to One. Looks like you're an RPG nerd a bit, or at least that we said goodbye to Gravity. All this stuff looks wonderful. And I mean, I love the European, you know, style graphic novels and the art. I actually just discovered a Blacksod, which I'd never read before. Have you ever checked that out?
Yeah, it's incredible. I don't understand how he puts the work into that. Watercolor paintings and like, oh, it's just incredible.
Yeah. And I was hanging out with my daughter, and I was reading it last night, and I was like, you want to see some art that's going to make you cry? And she goes, it just never makes, it's never going to make you want to pick up a pencil again. Like I was just like, this is done. Mwah. But your work is not in necessarily that style, but it does seem to be in the European style. And to me, that is very much a compliment, because that is synonymous to just beautiful, gorgeous, detailed stuff. so congratulations on your work, sir. I'm very impressed.
That's really nice to hear. Yeah, like European comics were definitely what I read as a kid. I'm from a really small town in Scotland, so we didn't have like a comic store or anything like that. And so we had a library that kind of stocked the classics, which, as I say, were for me Asterix and Obelix, which are this I want to say, yeah, based around Roman times, but this French Gaul clan that are fighting the Romans essentially. And it was for me, that was everything as a kid. And so I've taken a lot from that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, your style is, I mean, it's funny because I think people use it in a disparaging way, but I don't think it's disparaging at all. I mean, it's a little cartoony, it's animated style, stuff like that. And I mean, you're in Glasgow. I mean, I've interviewed people in the UK before from like different areas and stuff. I'm always fascinated because I'm an American. I live in Los Angeles and I grew up on the East Coast and New York and New Jersey, and so I was raised Marvel, DC, like all that stuff. And it took a long time for me to discover other kinds of books, you know, like Asterix and Obelix. I didn't even know anything about that. I didn't even know it existed until like years ago. You know, the Smurfs, I didn't even know it was a Belgian thing, right? Belgian. Like, I was like, that's American. Like that was on American TV. Like I said, the ignorant American. So, I mean, for you growing up in Scotland, it sounds like you were exposed to a whole different kind of comics, right? Like you just said.
Absolutely. I mean, DC and Marvel obviously were big enough that they did make it over here, but there was just no access to it for me as a kid. It wasn't until I was about 16 that a friend gave me a copy of Hellboy, and Hellboy was the one that turned to me.
Oh, really?
Even to this day, I still think it's one of the most incredible sets of books. But up until that point, yeah, everything I had read was Asterix and Obelix, Tintin, and a few other things, and some cartoons as well. Like cartoons were a big influence for me, which is, as you, I think you said earlier, it's quite cartoony and quite elasticated sort of drawing style. That is because I just love cartoons, basically.
And so how did you, I mean, if you're in Glasgow, and I don't mean to sound like, again, the ignorant American, like get into comics, because my understanding is that from the people I've talked to in the UK, and maybe this is more like the London area and stuff like that, you know, like comics are not, or were not like they were in the US, right? Like where they were on
No,
every newsstand. Like I think Beano is the one thing that I've heard referenced a lot. And I know there's 2000 AD and stuff like that, but there, it wasn't like on every newsstand. So what, like, do you remember the first one that got you into it? Like, how did you, and just like, how did you like, I'm going to be a cartoonist. I'm in Glasgow. Like, I'm going to do this, like all that sort of thing. Like,
I mean, it was the advent of the internet, I suppose, really. I got really hooked onto web comics quite early on. So like Parker Vagrant, trying to I'm blanking on them now. White Ninja, Butternut Squash by Ramon Perez and stuff. There was all these web comics that I just absolutely adored. And it was kind of that thing of like, oh, I have the rudimentary skills that I could probably put this on the web somewhere. So there was that, you skip that barrier of like, how do I get into comics? How do I get published? And you just go straight for the internet, basically. So I created hundreds of pages of really terrible comics. Just years and years of trash. But you need that. You need to get that out of your system until you kind of hit your groove. And when I hit that groove, it was when I started Space Captain, which was 2014, I think 2013, 2014. But up until that point, I'd created hundreds of pages of absolute garbage.
Sure. Absolute garbage. Well, the stuff that I'm seeing, I mean, I checked out your website and I was like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. Even just web design. Like I was just like, this, everything looks gorgeous. So, you know, very professionally done. And what would you say like influenced your direct style? I mean, you mentioned Hellboy and I'm looking through your stuff and I'm like, I don't see any Hellboy in here. Like there's
No,
none of that Mike
no.
McNeil, you know, because I mean, you do come across people like you're around a long enough time and you can see the influences, right? Like of people. And what, who were the cartoonists that you discovered? Like, I guess, when did you like, you said Hellboy was the thing. Was that the thing that got you into comics, or had you been reading them as a kid, or like, was that the thing that got you collecting?
Yeah, I I touched on Spider-Man. So there was like the monthly Spider-Man comics kind of hit the newsagent stores
Gotcha.
around Scotland and stuff. Like, we still had these little things, and I would pick them up whenever I was given money to buy them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was when my friend handed me Hellboy. I was like, oh, comics can be this. Comics can be like super graphic design heavy and like, really bold shapes, weird stories, cults, Nazis, just really fun and interesting stories. And it kind of, I'd never really cottoned on to superheroes or never really, just latched onto them. That just there was some sort of disconnect for me there. But Hellboy was just, tickled that weird dark fantasy part of me.
Nice.
So that was definitely an influence. But then, like, style wise, I think it was all web comics. So I was really obsessed with one called Octopus Pie by Meredith Grann.
Okay.
I think she originally started releasing the books on Oni Press maybe or something towards the end.
Okay.
But now she makes video games and stuff. Her artwork is still incredible. So there's things like that. There was Butternut Squash by Ramon Perez, who does like mainstream comics, but he had this web comic that I just adored. It was really cartoony and sort of hinted towards European style. So yeah, there's just a bunch of things like that, really. And then it is just, everyone says your art style is essentially just you badly interpreting other people's art styles. And I did try and do my Mignola stuff for a while. But it's so difficult. Like, it looks so easy when you look at his comics, but when you actually try and do it, it's impossible. He is an actual master of his craft.
Yeah,
So
Mignola.
yeah.
Yeah, I just actually started I had gotten the Hellboy the library editions or whatever, like the big ones, and I just started rereading them in the fall, like around October, Christmas. And I was just like, he makes it looks like it should be easy, right? But you're just like, no. Like, he knows exactly where to put everything and where all the blacks go, and it's just like, it's amazing.
It's
And
incredible. There's so much depth in such simple drawings. It's crazy.
And his style is so like what Hellboy is, which is why, as much as I love Guillermo del Toro as a director, like any movie that they've made, I've been like, no, it doesn't look like this. Like the style is a character, you know what I mean? In the
Not
book.
even the cartoon films really touched on the right aesthetic. I don't think anyone's got it yet. It's a
No.
dream of mine to me and my friend have even like temporarily played around with like script writing a TV show for Hellboy and how
Oh,
it should
nice.
start. And like, I feel like I could do it justice if someone would just give me a few million dollars,
Just a few million. That's all we need. No, that's great. That's great. What do you think directly influenced your style? Because, like I said, I mean, well, we both love Mike Mignola, and you look at it and it's just like, oh my God, it's kind of breathtaking when especially in those library editions where it's like really big and you're just like, oh man, like this looks amazing. But your style is a bit like, I mean, again, it's a bit more like animated, at least in the Jacques book. And the space captain thing, I was looking through and I love the big mustache and everything. Like it just looks great. What are some of the, like, did you go to art school?
I did, yeah. I studied digital art. So it was
Okay.
kind of it's what we call a Mickey Mouse course. It's 3 years of just you playing about with absolutely no chance of getting a job at the end of it.
Okay.
It was a lot of like just trying everything. So they gave some basic art skills like color theory, life drawing, but then they also taught us like a bit of animation, a bit of filmmaking, a bit of script writing, and a bit of web design even as well. So I did all of that, and as I say, it's a Mickey Mouse course. It leads to nothing in the real world.
Sure.
But thankfully, I live in Scotland and education is free, so you get to just go to
Oh
university and
man, you're
play
killing
around.
me.
It's a lifesaver because the people I met there also influenced my style. I'm trying to be better than my friends, basically, which I think is all art is. And so yeah, they kind of influenced me as well, and they showed me other comics or like animated films or animated TV shows. And as I say, like, yeah, animation to me was a huge influence, more than comics, perhaps. which is as you pointed out rightfully, like everything is quite cartoony. And there was like cartoons when I was growing up called like Marsupilami, which was based on a Belgian comic. I think Disney made the cartoon.
Yeah.
And there was obviously like Tintin cartoons as well, Batman, any of those kind of things. I just love animation, really.
Sure, sure. And how would you say, do you work digitally primarily?
Yeah, I used to try inking because that's what everyone else did. And I was like, oh, that's the only way you can make comics is if you hand draw them painstaking. But I got a computer screen tablet in around 2013, 2014, just as I was making Space Cabin. And it changes everything. It makes life so much easier.
Yeah.
So now all my comics are entirely digitally made. It's kind of a crutch. You can delete things later on that you didn't want to do and redraw them pretty easily. But the amount of labor and wrist pains that I've saved myself for consequence.
Yeah, yeah. What software do you use?
I primarily use Clip Studio.
Yeah, me too. Drawings. Yay, Clip Studio. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you upgrade? Did you, or are you still on Clip Studio 1? Did you do the monthly fee?
I don't know
fee,
what
or...
version I'm on just now. No, no, I don't play the monthly thing.
No, neither do I. Yeah.
No. I have a big grudge against Adobe and everything else that's changing towards subscription bases.
Yeah.
So I'm on whatever version of it that you could actually download and keep it on your computer.
Yeah, me too.
But I think my drawing tablet is so old at this point that I can't upgrade to the new Windows version, so I can't get a lot of new software.
Oh my God, that's funny.
I'm going to have to bite the bullet at some point soon and buy something new.
Gotcha. I use Clip Studio, but I have in recent months discovered Affinity Photo, which... That looks like... I have not tested it for illustration, but Clip Studio is just so great, like for what I need it for.
Yeah.
I feel you. I did not like the subscription. Yeah. I almost caved because I actually bought myself a little tablet that had a pen, and I was like, oh, do I sign up for the $2? And I was like, no, I'm not gonna do it. No.
I'm gonna wait
and see what happens. I mean, honestly, it's not like a huge fee. It's not like the Adobe monthly fee, but you know.
No, it's not crippling. I just begrudge it.
Yeah.
Whoever did it first realized how much money could be made and everyone jumped on that bandwagon. Which again, all praise to Affinity. I think it cost maybe £30 to buy the piece of software that you need.
Yeah.
And that's yours with all the upgrades that they release for it as well.
Yeah.
So I want to try my next comic. I actually posted about this the other day. I want to try making an entire comic outside of Adobe.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to try using Affinity and see if I can do the whole thing, like coloring it anyway. I'll draw it in Clip Studio and try coloring it in Affinity.
Yeah, I was messing around with illustrating on my, I have a screen, a Huion screen, like it's a Wacom knockoff. And it just didn't click for me, but I didn't sit and spend a ton of time, you know, on it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I need to spend more time discovering this, but you know, that's also me, like who wants to learn a new piece of software?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, I think my friend pointed me towards Affinity back in like 2016, I think it was, or something.
Oh really?
When they just started. And it was such a departure from how everything in Adobe is laid out and how everything in Adobe works.
Yeah.
I could not quite wrap my brain around it.
Yeah.
But I'm at that point now where I don't care and I will just sit down for a week solid and I'll just learn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I plan to do over my holiday is try and learn software and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. So how do you begin traditionally? Do you sketch out or do you sketch in your, on your tablet? Like what's your work process for all this?
My work process, it kind of varies depending on what I'm doing. Some stories I just have a vague notion of what I want to do and I'll just start thumbnailing it.
Uh-huh.
But for the bigger stories like Roll to One or Jacques or Space Cabin and stuff, I script everything. So I write it like a movie script.
Oh, gotcha.
So I have interiors. I see what, you know, what the scene opens like, what panels, each panel is essentially a new scene kind of thing.
Yeah.
I write out all the dialogue and it just helps me not only write the story, I think it's a good way of writing a story, but it allows me to break out how the pages should sit. So when a break point should be in the conversation and when stuff should happen. So I just find that really useful.
Yeah.
So I start with the script and then I move on to Clip Studio and I actually do all the thumbnails in Clip Studio. Really low resolution thumbnails. So they are literally just like stick figures sometimes.
Oh, gotcha.
Just a really, really basic layouts of how I maybe want the panels to look, because panel layout for me is quite important. And I'm sometimes quite bad at it because I'll put like 12 panels on a page and I'll.
No, it looks amazing. The stuff that I'm looking at right now on my screen looks fantastic. Like, I mean, if you don't think that's great, I'm like, there's something wrong with this guy. Because
everyone's always just like, you know, it should be 9 at most, or like there's a certain regiment. Oh, like, sure, love cramming. I love cramming in as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And to the point where people say that's my style. It's just too many panels.
That's funny.
I wrote it ended up only being a one-shot comic called Never Ever After.
Uh-huh.
But that was my web comic that I'd done like 200 pages for in the past. We did like one new story and one new booklet, and one of the pages had 40 panels, I think.
Oh, wow.
And so they were literally like, you know, a thumbnail-sized panel for 40 panels.
Holy cow.
A bit of an addiction, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these pages and, you know, a lot of times I'm interviewing people and they have a Kickstarter or they're doing, and this is not their day job, let's just put it that way, quote unquote day job.
Yes.
And sometimes you can tell with comics, it's like, okay, everyone's trying their best. Even even with my own comic, like I have a little comic that is a hobby, you know, and it's not great. Like, I mean, it's not as great as like what you're doing, right? And I'm looking at this first page. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say that's a huge compliment. It's not my full-time job, I should say.
Yeah, but it looks like it is what I'm saying, because I'm looking at the pages and it is, I mean, when I say European style graphic novel, like it does look like something I would have, like I went on a trip to France, like right before the pandemic. And that was one of my goals, is like, I got to go check out the French comic book shop. And I'm going to bring home, I brought home like a stack of like hardcover, stuffed them in my backpack, was lugging, you know, like I was like, I got to get this stuff. So for me, how long, I'm like looking at your pages and I'm like, how long does it take you to crank out a page? Are you doing everything? Are you doing the coloring? Are you like all of it?
So for pretty much every comic previously, I did everything. Wrote most of them myself, apart from Space Cabin. I wrote that with a friend. But everything else, I Never Ever After wrote with a friend. So, write everything myself, draw everything myself, and color everything myself. But for this latest one, I started having quite bad wrist pain and finger pain.
Oh no!
So just to alleviate that, I hired a colorist for this book.
Okay.
A Frenchman. Quite conveniently.
That makes sense. Yeah.
by a guy called Adrian Bloch. And he's super friendly, super professional. It just cranked out colored pages so quickly.
Oh, wow.
Can't recommend them enough. And so, this book looks slightly different to what I would usually do. But to be honest, he stuck quite closely to what I kind of asked of him.
Sure.
I usually get help with the color. I got help with the color this time. I usually do it all myself, I should say.
Well, whatever you did,
which is probably why I have wrist pains all the time. But
well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that, like, I mean, I'm just, and how long does it take you to draw a page? Like, just put a page together?
It kind of depends, on how many panels I've done and how many different perspectives I have. But it's weird. So with Roll to One, which is about, originally it was about a 40 page comic. Quite detailed, so it's got kids playing D&D, so there's backgrounds, there's characters fighting. I think I cracked out the whole thing in about 6 weeks.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, it kind of amazed me, to be honest with you. But when I get into the zone, I get really hooked. And as I say, like, I have a day job, and the day job pays very well, so at nights I can do comics and just have fun with them.
Wow.
But that fun does sometimes, I'll get home, I'll make dinner as quickly as I can, I'll eat it. I'll make as much as I can as well, so I can have leftovers the next night. And then I'll just sit down for, 4 or 5 hours at times.
Holy cow.
I'm just totally, totally focused on it. I have no other commitments. Unlike yourself, I don't have kids. so I have a lot of spare time. I have a dog now and a wife, but other than that, you know, they're pretty easy.
Yeah, but you got to spend time with your wife, right? Like, you're not just coming and then running into the studio. And, you know, the dog needs to be fed and taken out for a walk, right?
Like, yeah. She's priority number one, the dog at the moment. But as soon as that's done, my wife has her other creative pursuits as well. So she does like pottery, or she's got a YouTube channel as well where she talks about Tolkien.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes she locks herself basically, you know, in our little workshop cupboard.
Yeah.
For 4 hours at a time doing her video, and I'll be doing comics.
Nice.
We're in the same room, but very separate at the same time.
Gotcha. Oh, wow. That's crazy. Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I mean, you have an Etsy shop and stuff like that. And it's always, because I started on Etsy and I'm thinking about moving over to, what's it called? Another service. Cause I just like Etsy has not been great for me. I mean, it's also me not publicizing and having Kickstarters and stuff like that. A lot of it is probably my own fault, but it seems like I started discovering like people were putting their comics on Etsy and stuff like that. How does that work for you? Cause it seems like you've been pretty successful. You got patches, you've got pins, you've got like, I mean, you got a like little enterprise going there on, you know, on the Chris Baldy store, Baldy's online store on Etsy. That's how you can find it. But, can you talk to me a little bit about that? Like, I mean, it seems like you got your act together.
No. I mean, years ago, I was really into conventions in the UK and stuff. So I would do 3, 4, 5 conventions around the UK.
Yeah.
I even did, you know, like SPX in America once, and I did TCAF in Toronto. So for that, and like I'm a graphic designer by day. So I really like designing things. So like the patches are a lot of fun to actually design.
Yeah.
So I just like to create those sort of things. All the books I like putting together, I really like the design part of that as well. So I've been doing this 10 years or something now in the convention circuit, so I just have a bunch of stuff at this point that's just cluttering up my house. So I need to sell it, so it's just on Etsy. So that's the Etsy store might look impressive, but it's 10 years worth of just stuff that's accumulated.
Gotcha.
But I found it okay for sales. It's not great. I hate Etsy's practice. Like, they seem to screw everyone over.
Yeah.
And every possible opportunity. And then they started giving priority to people that do free shipping. But, you know, that only hurts the seller. It doesn't hurt anyone else.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
I was not aware of that. Like, I mean, I have only like 3 items in my shop just because I am just swamped with stuff sometimes. And I have stuff that I could put up on there. But it's funny. I like what you were talking about enjoying the design aspect, because I mean, I'm going to be at LA Comic Con like this coming weekend, and I'm putting things together. And for the first time, I was like, oh, I'm going to make a pin or something like that. Right. And I'd never done it. Yeah. I was just like, and I found myself like really enjoying that process. And then I had to make like packaging for like the stickers or magnets that I was making. And I'm literally sitting there like folding, printing them out, folding everything. And I said to my wife, like, I really enjoy this part of it, like printing it out myself. Folding it, stapling everything. You know what I mean? I mean, it's work, but there was something like Zen about it that I was just like, and then it's kind of cool because I accidentally, quote unquote, bought like a really nice printer a long time ago. And I was just like lucky enough to be like able to be in my own house and be like, hey, I'm going to print this stuff, you know? And then I have a paper cutter, which I've had for 20 years. I've had this paper cutter So that the bit about like making my own stuff, like, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, I know I just did, but like, it's kind of cool, right?
Yeah,
like when you're making your own thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I've been a designer now for 13 or 15 years. I also have a little time that's slipping away.
It's happening for us all, sir.
Even in my day job, when I'm bored, I'll sit down and I'll just pretend that the product I need to make within the company, and I'll just design something for it. Like,
don't tell people that.
An intrinsic I'm self-employed. It's my company. It's fine.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So like as there's always a niche for me that needs to design something. And so if I like I as you mentioned earlier, I do like Dungeons and Dragons. I like playing Dungeons and Dragons. So one of my patches is they see me rolling and it's a big D20. I had that idea and it'd been like knocking around my brain for so long. I was like, I've got to do something with it. And so I played around with patches. I'd never made one before. Kind of researched how you actually do it. What's the best way to design it? Turns out it's like Illustrator. So just doing everything in vectors, you send it off to a company and they do all the hard part of figuring out how you actually stitch it together. But yeah, just it scratches that itch for me. I need to design stuff. And so even when I was doing the enamel pins for Space Captain, they're just these little metal pins, really simple. One has a little Space Captain logo and the other has a little sword on it for the enemy. And so I made the pins and they arrived, but they're just the pins themselves. There's no backing or anything. So I was like, okay, now I've got to design the backing for them. And so that's my next project, printing out all these little squares to put the pins on. It's just, it's endless. You could keep going forever. I've made tote bags in the past. I've made t-shirts once, but t-shirts are a pain in the butt. So yeah, there's just endless stuff. I'm trying to get away from it now. I'm just trying to focus on making books. Partly because, the world's on fire. I don't want to create any more waste that's going into the earth. So if I'm making something, it's something that's going to last, or it's a book, that you can at least recycle. If someone doesn't like it, I'm hoping they do, or just pass it on to someone else at least. And yeah, when I'm at conventions now, my table is just essentially stacked with all the different books that I have. I think I have five or six different books at this point.
That's great.
And I kind of want to focus on that, just building up a little library that I can sell to people.
I mean, what's great is, and I'm assuming that you've designed all these books yourself, right? Like you've designed the covers, you've designed all the, the dress and everything like that. Like everything looks really wonderful. I mean, that's, when I opened up the link, excuse me, Don't Hide PR, Melissa, sent me stuff. And I was just like, okay, like what is this? And I saw the Kickstarter and I was like, oh, this looks delightful. And then I was just, I happened to check this weekend and I was like, oh, the Kickstarter's over? I was like, well, how do I get this stuff? And then I found your Etsy thing and I was just like, oh, this looks, and then I discovered Space Captain, We Said Goodbye to Gravity, Roll to One, like you've got all these books on there. And I was just like, oh, his stuff just looks so fun. You know what I mean? And just charming and just like
Well,
really
yeah,
well
it's very
put
nice.
together. I'm gonna have to order something from your Etsy store. But can you talk to me a little bit about your like just your style of storytelling, because like I said, it doesn't seem dark. It seems very light. It seems very sort of, for lack of a better
You might want
term.
to read a few of them first.
Oh, really? Oh my
They
God. Are
all
you...
have a little tinge of sadness, at least.
Well, that's everything should have a tinge of sadness, but I'm just saying like it doesn't seem like you're making like, Alan Moore stuff. You know what I'm saying?
No.
It seems like
Yeah,
stuff that
there's hope in them, at least I think. So yeah, like I don't know about yourself, but I just have a again like this insatiable itch to write a story. And that might take on different forms. And in the most recent years, it's definitely taken a hard swing to a different direction. So we'll go back to like 2013 when we started Space Captain. I had been toying with doing comics myself because I'd always worked with my friend Holly. So I was like trying to figure out stuff myself. I took a Ray Bradbury book that I really like. And just decided to illustrate a story based on his short story in one of these books.
Which book was it?
So it was The Illustrated Man,
Oh, nice.
which is a collection of short stories, and it's a story called, I think, called Meteorite. And it's essentially a spaceship flying through space, and the story just starts, the ship explodes, and everyone is flung in different directions. out of the spacecraft, and obviously they're not accelerating, but they're continuing at whatever speed they're going. And they know they're all going to die, and so they're all communicating with each other while they can until the radio cuts out.
Oh.
It's a kind of dark but weirdly like beautiful story at the same time.
Yeah.
And I really like spacemen. I like space, like sci-fi. So I was like, I'll interpret that into a little comic. So I made like a 30-page comic, wrote the script based entirely on the actual story itself. And it was like a test for myself. Mm. But then one of the characters is just called Captain. And so I went into the office the next day, and I work with two of my friends, basically. And I made the joke. I was like, oh, I want to make a story called Space Captain, Captain of Space. as a really fun throwaway joke, essentially.
Yeah.
But then like a week later, Michael, who I work with, who's a programmer, he makes apps, but he really likes script writing, or he likes reading scripts and seeing how they're developed and stuff.
Yeah.
He came in with a story he had written.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty much the first issue of Space Captain. There's a few plot points we changed here and there, but it was pretty much as is in the book. And so it was just really interesting, and it was really much like more in depth than I had put into my idea of just Space Captain, Captain of Space. If I had been left alone, I probably would have just written something funny.
Because
back then I wasn't really confident in writing a dramatic story. But despite the name Space Captain, Captain of Space, the story is actually quite dark. It's all about the last human, basically, of Earth.
Oh, wow.
And he wakes up on a planet, you know, billions of miles away from Earth, and he's the only Earthman left. And he has to try and find his way back home to whatever is left at home.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of dark. It's comedic. It's all this stuff. I have a lot to thank for Michael on that one, because I probably would have just made a throwaway joke. And so after that, I was like, oh, you can do dark and funny and all this other stuff at the same time. So I just kept playing about with that idea. I did Never Ever After with my friend Holly, which was, again, it's this adventure about just two friends that sort of live in a Glasgow-esque city, but the city's got monsters in it and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So started playing about with that, and that we only ever ended up doing one issue of that as well. But then I got to Roll to One, which is obviously D&D based.
Yeah.
But I got to a point where I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it professionally in comics, because I've seen my friends that have made it, and they have to work so hard.
Yeah.
They have to just grind constantly.
Yeah.
Do conventions every other weekend or every weekend sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't have that in me. I don't think my style suits mainstream anyway.
What? You don't think so?
I think I could get away with like Oni Press and stuff like that. I don't think I could do superhero stuff. Like I couldn't do, you know.
Oh no. Well, no, I think you could.
Quotation marks mainstream films.
Oh no, no. Yeah. I disagree. I mean with what's happening with comics and stuff, like look at like sure. Raina Talgemeier, you know, and all this, you know, there's books like Amulet and Bone and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that your stuff is like really is the new thing that's happening in comics, right? Like, I think that this is the new, like your stuff and European stuff and the sophistication of like what you do. I feel like that is what's coming, right? Like that is going to be like the new norm in comics. Like, I think that something is happening with Marvel and DC and the mainstream and stuff like that, where that is just starting to kind of collapse as much as I like that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I feel like your style mainstream is becoming something else. If you follow what I'm saying, you know what I mean? And I think that your stuff, I mean, and anybody that's listening should go check out this Etsy shop, because I'm probably going to pick up a couple of books right after I get off of this call. like it looks like stuff that, you know, publishers are looking to put out. So I would not cut yourself off at the knees. Like I am very emphatic about like literally, no, I looked at Space Captain and I looked at World. Like I was looking at your stuff and I was like, I wish my stuff could be this good. Like I was just like, I think it's delightful. And so, you know, sometimes I have to do this on my podcast, Chris. I have to tell people, like, I understand what you're saying, that it's a grind. And I totally get it. I mean, I'm going to do a convention this weekend, but tables cost a lot. you know, it's traveling crazy. Can be hard, especially if you have a family and stuff like that all the time. Mm. And then, you know, eating and staying healthy and all that stuff. But I think we're at a point where stuff like your stuff, there is a way for you to break through without maybe having to do that, you know, all that convention stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like you said, God bless the internet.
Yeah. And I do get that. Like, my friend, Sarah Grayley, she's done a bunch of like, I think Rick and Morty stuff, but also like she does the Minecraft comics.
Okay.
Like her style is also very cartoony and stuff.
Yeah.
Her full-time job is comics.
Oh wow.
She does it, and I was looking at her. I was like, she works so hard and is so professional about it. I was just like, I just don't have that level of commitment for comics, I don't think.
Sure.
Which I think is maybe where it happened, because like I met with an agent. I was in New York, so I arranged a meeting with a fairly high up guy, and he really liked Roll to One, what I'd done with it, and he wanted me to do more of it. But by that point, I really liked Roll to One. I'm really proud of that book.
Yeah.
And he wanted to make it into like a series of stuff, and he wanted the storylines to be a certain way. But I was too involved with it at that point. And I was like, I don't want it to be anything more than it is.
Yeah.
And so there was a shift in my mind of like, okay, I don't want to make comics as such for other people. I really want people to enjoy it, and I really want as many people to read it as possible.
Yeah.
But for me, it's not. Yeah, it wasn't about the success of doing it full time. It was more about making the stories I want to make and make them as well as I can make them.
Yeah.
So I had a real shift of how I create comics. So Roll to One was a pivotal point at that point.
Yeah.
And so I stopped trying to get into the mainstream. Like, I was quite obsessed with it. I really wanted to make a name for myself as such.
Got it.
But yeah, I did Roll to One, and that was fine. Then the pandemic struck at some point.
Oh, jeez.
I don't think I did anything in between that. And so I just started drawing mini comics, and I was having a lot of fun. So We Said Goodbye to Gravity is essentially a collection of 8 or 9 different short stories. Each one would be either a different style of story or a different visual style. So I've tried to draw each one differently.
Yeah.
So it looks like a different artist has drawn it. So it was just at that point, just a creative journey. Like, what can I do that makes me interested or I'm having fun? And at the end of it, I had 8 or 9 stories that I really, really liked. So I made the book and I sold it at conventions whenever we could get back out of lockdown.
Well, that cover to We Said Goodbye to Gravity is gorgeous. That looks like a lot of work, my friend.
Yeah, the main story in the book is called We Said Goodbye to Gravity, and it's all about gravity suddenly just releases and people float away, but the rest of the population just kind of adapt, as we do when terrible things happen.
Yeah.
As I say, there's a lot of my stories have a dark undertone, a sadness maybe. Uh-huh. I don't know. Existential dread.
Is that because you're from Scotland?
Yeah, I think so. Like, as I say, it's winter right now. I'm in the very north of Scotland at the moment, and it's dark by 4 p.m. And so we have nothing but time to contemplate our ultimate demises, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So yeah, I genuinely think it is. I think it's just a bit of being an artist. I don't know about yourself, but like, it's just an innate sadness in us all, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because to be a storyteller, I think you have to be quite empathetic to the world.
Sure.
And so you see all the suffering and you're like, oh God, yeah. And so it just leaks into your stories, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all I know is that I've looked through your stuff, and this is the one thing that I love chatting about with people, because I had a chat with another cartoonist the other day, somebody who's been in the industry for a long time. I was just hanging out with them. And we were chatting about the idea of having fun, right? And I've chatted with a lot of, actually another artist in the UK on my podcast, and a couple of other artists, and they're like, you know, at the end of the day, I just sit down and, you know, it's like fun. Like, I'm creating an art, and I'm like, it's fun? Like, I'm like, this isn't fun. Like, I'm like, I am completely anxious. Like, is this line right? Like, am I, like, does this, I suck at perspective. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have time to make this look as as like perfect as I want it to, you know, and so I'm going back and getting rid of paint. Like I tried to, I was working on a book called Baby Badass with a friend of mine a long time ago. And it was like, literally I would start pages and I would throw them out. And my friend's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no, this isn't. So talk to me a little bit about having fun, because that is like one thing that, like, for me, sometimes it is like, I like doodling. I like drawing superheroes. Like I like drawing and seeing what I can do with them. Right. Like mashing them up and stuff like that.
Yeah, that
to me is fun. But when I'm working on my own thing, I get like really anxious and I get like really and slow down. And I'm like, and so talk to me a little bit about the aspect of having fun with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's
that
tricky,
didn't sound like, fun, Chris.
No. Oh, I mean, it's a contradictory statement, me saying I have fun when I'm doing it. When there was no pressure and when I was doing the short comics and stuff, it was just kind of for myself, but
sure.
When I was doing Jacques, it was the biggest grind of my life, I think. Because I've been working on it for 2 years and it's only 50 pages long. I should have knocked it out of the park much quicker than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, life gets in the way. A bunch of shit happens, you know, COVID, everything else.
Oh.
It's when I stop, as soon as I stop, like I stopped halfway through doing it all. So I just needed to take a break for a while. Getting started again is just it's just the most impossible. It's like, trying to start a jet plane with your hands.
Yeah.
Like it's moving, getting back into that pace of things. But then again, at the same time, I see my friends. I have some incredibly talented friends and I look at their work and I'm like, well, I can't do that.
Really?
I can point you towards some friends that just, their artwork is incredible.
Yeah.
And it does just, it makes you go, oh crap, I can't do that. So maybe what's the point? There's enough people out there that say nice things about my work. And you always have to put it in perspective. There's people that are jealous or have been very kind about what they think of my work.
Yeah.
And saying that they wish they could do what I do. And so I have to remember that I do have a skill to it. Even if it's not the degree I want it to be, it's still a fairly high degree.
Yeah.
And so remember to have fun with that and just create stories, as I say, that I want to do.
Yeah.
And Jacques was one of the short stories and we said goodbye to Gravity. He was only 6 pages long.
Yeah.
And for that story, I was like, I'll have no dialogue in it, just those 6 pages. And I just want to create like a little action comic.
Yeah.
Of this cat burglar having fun in Paris. And after the 6 pages, I really enjoyed that story. And so it stuck in the back of my mind. I was like, well, what if I did like a 50-page comic that had no dialogue? And so that's what Jacques was born from. It was just, again, just I was like, I want to have fun and I want to challenge myself to see if I can do this.
Uh-huh.
And it was a real struggle at times, but at the end of it, I was like super proud. So again, super happy that I'd done it. There's you know, a sentence in the whole book, but that even that is there just for a little bit of flair, I suppose, more than anything. It doesn't really need to be there. I could probably get away without it.
Sure.
So yeah, I think just challenging yourself to do not just stories that'll be fun for other people to read, but something that challenges yourself, not without bounds, so that you get disappointed by the fact that you can't do it. Like, I can't do superheroes, so I'll probably never do superheroes. I can't draw that sort of like fighting dynamics. I can't draw this.
Yeah, but Space Captain looks like a superhero to me, at least the pages that I saw. It's kind of like superhero-y.
Yeah, it's probably about as close as I got, I would say. And it was, even that was a lot of fun. But it was rooted in sci-fi. I think that's how I got around it. I just told myself it was a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
And I really like sci-fi, so.
Got it.
I don't know about how you make it fun as such, but more than just finding what makes you happy, I think.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's interesting. No, I mean, that's great stuff. That's a great way to look at it. I mean, and that's what I've tried to do too, is like, this is the best that I can do with what I've got. I mean, it's taken me 5 years, past 5 years, to even get to the second chapter of my book, and I'm only halfway done, but I'm kind of doing...
Do you work with other people or do you just do stuff
yourself?
I
wanted to, so like the whole way it started was to see if I could make a comic on my own. Like I was just like, can I do a comic on my own? Like, can I color it? Yeah. Can I letter it? Can I do it? And you know, the first issue that I ever did, there was no plan to do anything else, and it was only at a convention where I was talking to somebody was asking me about the idea and I was literally kind of pitching it to them. And I was like, oh, it, in my brain, I was like, oh, it could go this way. Oh, it could go this way. And so for me, it was like, hey, I'm very self-critical of my own stuff. Like I really beat myself up. And again, it's because probably because I exposed myself to too many other things. Like, you know, like I'm looking at other comics, like Black Sad last night. I literally was like, why am I doing anything? Like, I was like, why, you know, like it's interesting that the things that you love can sometimes drive you into a depression. But in any case, So, I mean, and during the pandemic happened and unlike any other people, like my job just kicked into high gear because it was very much like there was more things that we needed to do with less expertise behind them. And my team kind of needed to fill that gap at my job where it was like, okay. And then by the end of the day, you're just tired and God, are we all going to die and all that stuff. So I thought I was going to have more time to the pandemic to focus on it, but that it didn't end up being the case, but
no. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the same.
And so in any case, it is a interesting way to look at it. But I also have hope because sometimes I see comics and I'm like, oh, this is successful. Like I could maybe do something like this. So not calling anything out. Yeah. I'm just saying like, or not even successful. Like somebody's doing this and people are behind it. Like, I'm like, okay. Like, you know, doing stuff like that. But the one thing I wanted to ask you about, the final thing is role-playing games. Like how did you get into them? Because I'm a role-playing game. I used to run a superhero role-playing game for years and years. And then the pandemic hit. Oh,
which one?
Villains and Vigilantes. It's called Villains and Vigilantes.
I think I played that when I was a kid.
It was in the 80s. And then we modified the rules over the years. And, you know, and they came out with a new version a little while ago. That was the game that we played up until, and then people wanted to play via Zoom. And I was like, you don't understand during the pandemic. I was just like, I'm sitting in front of a computer all day. Like the fun part of this is like sitting in a room with people, you know?
So I've tried role playing games over the internet and it doesn't scratch that itch for me. I think I need to be in person.
It doesn't.
Drinking, B, eating a bunch of junk food.
Staying up all night. And I was the GM that's a lot of work sometimes. I don't think people realize like how much work GMing, you know, DMing is. Like it can be
it's crazy.
A lot of work. And you know,
I've never done it myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I started in high school.
Okay, yeah, same here.
Our computing teacher ran a D&D group.
Oh, nice.
So I just kind of went along to see what it would be about. Didn't know anything about it, really.
Yeah.
I was a nerd in every other aspect. So I assumed it would be for me. And it was amazing. It was such a fun group. So we'd play after school. And then eventually you reach that echelon of being accepted that I got accepted into his like actual friends group game at nights.
Oh, gotcha.
So me and this sounds so dodgy now, but me and a bunch of other friends were invited into his house to play D&D with him and his adult friends while they were drinking. But there was literally nothing, you know, nothing bad going on. They didn't allow us to drink and they just plied us with snack foods and made us play these D&D games.
Nice.
So it was amazing. And they introduced us to, as I say, I think we played the superhero one. I think I remember my character being... he could jump really high. I think that was a superpower. But one of the others had the ability of the Flash, so he could run really fast.
Yeah.
But we all paid for him to have like this huge iron helmet and shoulder pads, so he could just run into people and just
charge into them like a battering. That's
so
great.
It was just essentially a killing machine. We used to play that. And
that's great.
Played it from like... probably like 13 to 17 probably until I went to uni. And then it kind of dropped off for years, but thankfully in the last couple of years I've been playing again, and now our friends run a group thankfully they do all the hard work. I just have to show up, drink booze, eat snacks, and roll some dice. So
that's great.
I think for a lot of people it's a level of awkwardness playing it. Like, they have to accept that they have to role play and they have to kind of be actors.
Sure.
And even I still struggle with that slightly, but my wife plays as well, and our other friends, they get into character, they do voices, they are doing the whole thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, for me, I was an actor in my 20s, like in Los Angeles. Yeah, and so it scratches that itch too, especially being the GM, because it gives you both, you know, you can do other characters and then you can also create the world and stuff like that. But like, it just kind of burns me out sometimes, because it's like, I need to focus on the other things too. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was so much fun, and someday I'll get back. I just want to play in a game. I don't want to run a game anymore.
Yeah.
I want to play.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I watch my friend, and like, the amount of voices he has to remember, which character has which voice, and like, he has to script the whole story, and he'll script the story, and obviously we'll go off piste and we'll do something he is not expecting.
Sure.
So he just has to make up as it's going along. And yeah, it's so much fun. I would never run one myself. I would have to have someone else doing it for me.
Sure. No, that's great. Roll to One is based on your experiences in role playing, or?
Yeah, again, it was the entire reason I did it was like, I was trying to figure out something fun to do and something challenging. And so I decided I'll have the top story, which is about these kids, and there's a new kid joins the school. And so it's the new kid trying to integrate into a new social group.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they're playing D&D. So they're switching between both conversations, as you do when you're playing D&D. Like, you'll be playing in the game and then you'll just go off piste talking about an actual life thing.
Yeah.
And so it's switching between the two. And I really wanted to try that like story dynamic of flicking between two worlds and the speech integrating into both of them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's what Roll to One ended up being. It was just, again, like an experiment for me.
That's awesome.
It's probably one of the books I'm most proud of, I think. And still, yeah, like, I have a horrible thing. As soon as I make a book, I hate it. But that one still holds a big piece of my heart.
That's great. Well, again, I'm looking forward to checking out your stuff. People should go to Etsy, look up the Chris Baldy store. Where can people find you online? Like, what's your social media? Are you on Instagram? Are you still on the Twix? I keep people giving people a hard time about Twix.
Yeah, I'd been off of the bird site for a year. I'd been in Mastodon, essentially. I really like Mastodon.
I've heard of Mastodon, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, it's essentially what Blue Sky is. So everyone moved over to Blue Sky because that's the guy that made Twitter, made Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Blue Sky is just like a fancy version of Mastodon.
Okay.
But it's still owned by a billionaire, so it's obviously going to go down the toilet. Whereas Mastodon is a community run thing, like it's sort of open source.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's off subject. I'm not really on Twitter. I am at the moment, but that's only because I've been publicizing the Kickstarter. As soon as that is finished, I will be off again and you won't hear me again.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Instagram is probably your best bet.
Okay.
Just at Chris Baldy. Search Mastodon for at Chris Baldy at mastodon.scott for Scotland. And Blue Sky. I don't know how you find people on Blue Sky at Chris Baldy something or other.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to spell out your it's etsy.com/UK/shop/Chris Baldy, and Baldy is BALDIE. Thank you for your time, sir. I cannot wait to check some of this stuff out. Everything looks gorgeous and I am in awe. So, you know, as far as like, you know, you looking at other people and being like, oh, I wish I could do that. You've definitely got me where I was like, oh, I wish I could do that or have my act together as much as you seem to, at least on Etsy. Your stuff looks great, sir. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
Yeah.
And I hope I can do it again as well.
Absolutely. Anytime you want to come back on, let me know and we will set up the time zone difference. What time is it there now for you?
So it's 7 p.m. here.
Oh,
just now.
Good. Okay. So I hope.
So yeah, thank you for waking up on a Sunday morning to do this.
Oh,
well.
This is not. I'm an early riser, but we started at 10 a.m. my time.
Yeah, so. You've got a family, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, my daughter's a teenager now, so the less time she wants to spend with me. but yeah, no. Anyway, your name is Chris Baldy.
Yes.
The current book is Jacques and the Great Art Theft. I wanted to get the whole thing in there. Jacques and the Great Art Theft. It looks like you've got some other great stuff on Etsy. Space Captain, Roll to One. Would You Mind Waiting a While? There's patches, there's pins. Please go check out Chris Baldy's stuff. This looks great. This looks right up my alley. And I predict that someday soon, sir, you will be in the mainstream of comics, because I think that this stuff could be like on Scholastic. It could be, you know, maybe on, I mean, this looks like stuff that I've seen on those platforms. So I'm going to be able to say, I knew you when, and you'll be famous. And you'll be like, Christian who? And I'll be like, I'm just the guy with the little comic and the podcast. So thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you so much. It's been so much fun.
Excellent. My name is Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are no longer on the hellscape that is Twix, but we are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. I will also be at LA Comic Con this weekend with my little mini comics and prints. And there's a new Periwinkle post pin. And the table number now is table G07 in Artist Alley. They moved it on me, folks. I don't know what to say. It's a little bit like musical chairs, but just find me. I have a big banner. You'll be able to see Part-Time Fanboy / Periwinkle Puss. In any case, go to Chris Baldy's store on Etsy. Thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fan.